Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster. This is the Buckmaster Show for Thursday, December 20th, 2012. Hope your day is going well and you're dealing with the holiday stress in a very appropriate way. And without a doubt, it seems to me anyway, the month of December always feels like the fastest month of the year. It is just gone before you know it, and it's New Year's Eve. We are live each weekday, noon to one on the Buckmaster Show. We are on AM 1030. KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. It is also Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, a station with big reach. We are live streaming at buckmastershow.com. That's my website. And at the station's website, kvoi.com. We post our program usually within an hour of its conclusion to my website, so you can listen anytime, anywhere. We also post to the tucsoncitizen.com website and tucsoncitizen.com as well. And now there are links to our program at the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. That's gvnews.com and homepage for Blog for Arizona. They have us prominently displayed at blogforarizona.com. Here's the lineup for today's show. We will meet one of the co-founders of a nonpartisan Arizona group, which has a four-point blueprint for what they call sane immigration reform. 20 minutes past the hour, world-famous comet discoverer Dr. David Levy joins us to talk about the holiday night sky. 30 minutes past the hour, we will meet Cam Juarez. Mr. Juarez, one of two new TUSD board members. We met Crystal Foster earlier in the week. Today, it's Cam's turn. And we'll close out the show with our Tucson historian, Ken Scoville, talking about Christmases past in the old Pueblo. If there is a comment or question for any of our guests, you are always welcome to join us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040. Well, as Congress gears up to once again tackle the long simmering issue of comprehensive immigration reform next year, there is a bipartisan group of prominent community leaders in Arizona hoping to lead the way with a four-point blueprint for fixing the nation's broken immigration system and perhaps rehabilitating Arizona's tarnished national image in that area. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line from Phoenix, where she heads up Uraeus Communications, is Lisa Uraeus, who is the co-author of The Real Arizona Coalition, which is a group of some 40 business groups, religious organizations, and minority and immigrant advocacy groups. They have a plan that has an acronym known as SANE, S-A-N-E. Lisa, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. It's good to hear from you.
Lisa, tell me a little bit about the plan you are calling SANE.
Sure. Well, you know, as many folks know, Arizona has been at the forefront of the immigration debate for several years now, in particular over the last 2.5 years since the passage of SB 1070. And really, the formation of the organization was to counter the some 6 million mostly negative media hits we had throughout the world, and just trying to find a way to come together with a group that could address this issue in a more civil way and in a way that was really addressing the issue head on. Because we know that the federal government has a responsibility for working through the federal immigration system, and we need them to get to work. So that was the goal of the organization.
SANE has four components: secure our sovereign borders, account for those here without lawful authority, necessary bureaucratic reform, and engage all levels of government. Why don't we quickly go through these? Give
sure.
us some of your thoughts. First of all, secure our sovereign borders.
Right. Well, you know, part of the issue here is there's always a question about, you know, what does this mean? And so secure the borders really is focusing on land ports of entry throughout the United States, We think that there is a clear law enforcement definition of operational control of the border as defined and achieved by the Yuma, San Diego, and El Centro sectors. We need to address the challenges associated with establishing proper security screening in high-volume ports of entry, and then also addressing tribal nations and taking them into account because they cross international boundaries. So that definition is something that we think is clear. It's been done before. Operational control is doable. So I think we feel that that resolves a lot of the questions about what does, you know, secure the border mean.
And number two is a very important one and probably the most controversial, and that would be what about the folks that are here already without lawful authority?
Absolutely. We're estimating about 11 million folks here who are undocumented or do not have lawful authority. And so our proposal, the SANE Immigration Platform, basically suggests that for those who entered the U.S. without lawful authority as of, you know, January 1st, 2011, for example, that they may apply within a five-year period, initially for temporary legal residency. During that time frame, they would undergo a background check, and those with felony convictions other than identity violations would be deported. Anybody with a felony conviction would be deported. But then at the end of that five-year period, that those who have completed the steps, they would be eligible for permanent legal residency. And so that's really important for us. It helps us account. It helps us sort of collect the data about where folks are working, where the needs are, and it brings people out of the shadows and gives them the opportunity to live and work here legally. And then the question of citizenship, of course, is something that we think Congress needs to address. Many of us believe that the younger folks, Dreamers, for example, should, by all accounts, be given a clear path to citizenship. Others, maybe it's a little different. Maybe it's a longer process, maybe it's a more rigorous process, or maybe they don't want to be citizens. Well, those are some of the things that we've been discussing.
And of course, cutting through a lot of the bureaucratic reform and getting everybody involved at all levels of government, very important. Some of the feathers of some of the lawmakers were ruffled a little bit that they did not feel that they were consulted on this. What do you say to those Arizona lawmakers who say you're doing an end run around them?
Well, you know, in fact, we have met with every member of our congressional delegation on this. And again, the Real Arizona Coalition's position is that this is a federal issue. We believe that the Supreme Court has made it decidedly clear that this is a federal issue and that the state does not have jurisdiction to enact immigration laws without the federal government's participation and cooperation. So, you know, we have certainly vetted the platform with a few of the state legislators. The governor's office has been participating with us to some degree. She's been sending members of her staff, policy advisors, etc. But, you know, ultimately, this is Congress's job, and we want Congress to do their job. So it's really important for us to encourage our congressional delegation to lead on this issue. We've met with incoming Senator Flake's office, with Senator Kyle, with Congressman Pastore's office, and are, as we mentioned, talking with all of the others as well. So it's really important for us as Arizona to ensure that we're leading on this issue and are able to learn from all of the issues that we've been going through in these past few years so that we can propose what we think is a good working solution.
Lisa Urias is with us. She's co-founder of the Real Arizona Coalition, which has put forward a blueprint that has been dubbed SANE, S-A-N-E, and it's gotten generally, Lisa, I would say, very favorable press, hasn't it?
We have. In fact, we've had favorable. One of our goals, obviously, is to ensure that the rest of Arizona and the rest of the world knows that we actually are smart, capable people here who are able to address these very difficult and often complex issues in a bipartisan way. And we've been very fortunate to have a lot of very positive media on this issue. We're working, in fact, now with the New York Times to try and get them to do some positive news, because they've certainly given us a lot of negative news in the past few years. And Justice O'Connor has been working with us and has been very helpful, so it's been quite a pleasure to have the O'Connor House involved as well.
So what's the next step, Lisa?
Well, we continue to talk with our congressional delegation and to ensure that we are engaged in providing this platform to other organizations across the nation who are also interested in federal immigration reform. We are working very closely with the Partnership for a New American Economy, which is Mayor Bloomberg's effort to advance federal immigration reform. More than 400 multinational CEOs have signed on to that platform, which is very similar to ours. So we're just continuing to make sure that Arizona has a seat at the table and is able to provide insight into the issue.
And if folks would like more information, what would be a good source for them?
We would love to have them join us. We are gathering more and more signatures in support of the platform. TheRealArizona.org is the website, and there you can sign up to support SANE. No donations are needed. You can just get on there and sign and support the platform.
Lisa Urias, thank you very much for spending some time talking with us about the Real Arizona Coalition and SANE. Thanks a lot. Have a great holiday season, Lisa.
Thank you so much. You too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Coming up now on 12:16 on the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show, we will be talking next with renowned comet discoverer David Levy about the lovely, lovely holiday night sky. That's coming up next on the Buckmaster Show.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 6 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, La Cañada from Ina to River, and Phase 2 of Saharita Road. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
The Rug Gallery is celebrating its 25th anniversary jubilee celebration with a colossal tent sale, offering up to 75% off at La Encantada Shopping Center at Campbell and Skyline in Tucson. With over 2,000 hand-woven imported rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. With an international reputation, the Rug Gallery has graced the cover of Christie's magazine and is featured in many other high-end publications. Stop by and check out the Rug Gallery with Arizona's largest in-stock inventory of fine, high-quality, hand-woven, imported rugs during the colossal tent sale with up to 75% off at Tucson's La Encantada Shopping Center in the foothills of the Catalinas. Or visit the Rug Gallery online at ruggalleryaz.com/sale or call 571-RUGS. Life on Earth begins with water. The plants that sustain us and biodiversity that surrounds us. At UA Biosphere 2, water is big science.
From our tropical rainforest and million-gallon ocean to the mountain slopes of LEO, our new Landscape Evolution Observatory. By recreating the natural world on such an immense scale, LEO aims to reveal better ways to understand and manage global water resources. Come see how Biosphere 2 is being used to model climate science, test smart technology, and develop new environmental strategies that can help build a stronger 21st century community. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2, where innovation lives, just north of Tucson, America's science city. Explore today. More information at b2science.org.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Well, 21 now on the Buckmaster Show, this Thursday edition on the 20th of December. This portion brought to you by our friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido, a beautiful facility, a true continuing care retirement community for adults 55 and better. You can find out more about Splendido on their fantastic website, SplendidoTucson.com. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line from his observatory in Vail, Arizona, is Dr. David Levy, the Buckmaster Show contributor on science. David is the former science editor of Parade magazine. He now heads up and is the founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. He is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. He has discovered 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David is frantically hoping for that number 24, so it will be a lot easier, David, with my introduction to say, discovered 24 comets.
Yeah.
How are you, David, this holiday season?
Oh, I'm very well, and Wendy and I are wishing you and your family a very Merry Christmas, the very best for the holidays, a wonderful 2013, and we want to thank you for that lovely card you sent us.
Well, thank you. It was very heartfelt, David. This is kind of an anniversary week for you. You started your search for comets on December the 17th, 1965, so it's the 47th anniversary week of your comet searching.
Yes, it is. On Friday, October the 29th, I wrote in my diary that I had planned to awake at 4:30. When I woke up, it was 5:35 because I overslept. By 5:55, thanks to my bicycle, I was at the lookout on the summit of Westmount Mountain. Looking to the east, I noticed something that resembled a searchlight. It was definitely not a searchlight. It was between 5 and 10 degrees long. It was the tail of Comet Akasaki. And about 2 months later, on December the 17th, I began my own comet search, and that has been going on ever since to that day.
It's been very successful for you. What was it about comets, David, that resonated so much with you as a young person?
Well, it was everything about them. The first is that even though I had never seen one, I knew that a shining comet in the dark was one of the most beautiful sights in nature to see. Really, really wonderful. I was early attached to the lore of comets, to the history, and to the use of comets in English literature. And so when I started the observing search, I also started a research project that culminated in my PhD thesis that I recently received.
Yeah.
PhD for.
You received your PhD, and it is a rather unusual subject matter about literature and astronomy.
Yes, it was. It was actually called The Night, the Sky in Early Modern English Literature. And I discovered that William Shakespeare, of all writers, had invoked the night sky in his writings more than all the other authors of his time put together. And so I based a thesis on that. And it was really a lot of fun to do.
The meteor shower, speaking of the night sky, what we had the Geminids.
Yes, the Geminid shower was absolutely phenomenal this year. In 1 hour of observing, a little bit more than that, I counted 80 meteors on the night
wow.
of the 13th. The 14th, of course, it was raining and I didn't observe, but the night before, I did very, very well. Also, that same night, there was the culmination of a new meteor shower called the Arietids, which come from a comet or Tannen, which has been known for some time, but this is the first year that meteors from that comet came into the orbit of our planet, and we were able to observe it. And I believe that I saw one of those about 6 weeks ago.
Well, the night sky is always special to me. It's around my birthday time and Christmas when the Orion's Belt appears.
When is your birthday, Bill?
My birthday was December the 16th, is December 16th, last Sunday.
Yeah.
And I always associate Orion's Belt in the sky with the holidays. Almost looks like a large cross.
Yeah, Orion's Belt, when it comes up early in the sky, reminds me of Robert Frost, who writes about how Orion sort of is in the east throwing a leg over the fence as he crawls into the farm. And that's a wonderful birthday message for you, and many happy returns for your latest birthday.
Thank you, David. We had a caller who did not want to go on the air and wants to know if people who sell stars as gifts, is that some kind of a scam? That's the question.
Yes, it is. The International Astronomical Union is really the only body that can label things in the sky and have them be official. And the only kind of object that it takes advantage of are the small bodies and large bodies that orbit the sun in our own solar system. But to just sell a star like that is not something that is recognized by astronomers.
David, what about what's being called NASA's big drum?
Well, this is an expression that I kind of made up when I wanted to say that I think that NASA really does need a goal, a massive and mighty, wonderful goal to inspire people the way it did with the moon landings in the 1960s and 70s. And Obama's suggestion that we actually go to the moon and then to a near-Earth asteroid where we could learn about an object that could someday collide with the Earth is a very noble goal, I believe. The only thing we need to do is to get a bigger drum and really publicize it a little bit more.
David, we've got another question from Greg. He wants to go on with us. Greg is on the Buckmaster Show live line. A question about Orion. Go ahead, Greg.
Gentlemen, first, season's greetings to you.
Thank
both.
You.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
David, let me ask you about, you mentioned the constellation Orion, and I've had this fascination with Orion, and specifically the fact that the pyramids in Egypt, apparently, from my understanding, and I'll probably mess this up, but if you do a beeline straight to the top of each of those pyramids, it centers in on the belt of Orion. So my question is, did they have a take back then on the fact that maybe some beings from other planets and other stars had come here?
Well, Greg, that was a very good question. I'm glad you called to ask it. It's not actually the belt of Orion. What the reading that I have is that they pointed toward the pole star. You can't really point to the belt of Orion because the belt kind of rises in the east and sets in the west like all the other stars, but it can point to the pole star, which kind of stays stationary all the time, and because that's along the line of the Earth's axis. And the pole star that the pyramids were pointing to was of the time Suban in the constellation of Draco. The pole star varies over a period of 22,000 years because the Earth's axis wobbles like a top.
Okay, David, we've got to run. Do you have a quick holiday quote? One sentence.
One sentence would be, yes, the one holiday quote that I have right now is, I guess I don't. My holiday quote is to wish you and all of your listeners a very happy and wonderful Christmas season.
Thank you, David. Same to you.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. It's a scene that is playing out again today in Newtown, Connecticut. Grim-faced mourners heading into a church to attend a funeral for one of the young victims of last week's school shooting. House Speaker Boehner says President Obama is failing to stand up to his fellow Democrats as the clock ticks down on the dispute over the fiscal cliff. Still no deal to keep from going over the edge in the new year. Russia's president is distancing himself from Syria's Bashar Assad, longtime Russian ally. Vladimir Putin suggesting today that the Assad regime is growing weaker. On Wall Street, stocks are higher, the Dow up about 31 points at 13,286, the NASDAQ better by 5, the S&P up 5 points as well. More details at srnnews.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Finding the perfect Tucson rental home is now easy thanks to Tucson Rental Homes, which offer high-quality 1, 2, and 3-bedroom luxury rental homes with private gated yards in a classic Santa Fe-style architecture. Designed, built, and managed by Tucson Rental Homes, prices start at just $750 a month. Check out our many homes now available at TucsonRentalHomes.com.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Now in its seventh year, the RTA has finished over 400 projects, including five major roadways. Current projects include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson and Grant Road at Oracle. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. With ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service, providing jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer, the RTA is delivering our promise to you.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. About 12:35 now on this Thursday, it's our pleasure to introduce to the Buckmaster Show listeners the incoming TUSD board member who will join the other incoming member, Crystal Foster, who we met on the program earlier this week. He's Cam Juarez. And he was, Cam, how are you, first of all? Great to see you.
I'm doing great. Thank you, Bill, for having me on the show. And of course, season's greetings to you, to your staff, and to all the listeners out there.
Thank you very much. We met Crystal, and now we have you on the program. And you have, were you two sworn in officially, or is that was that just ceremonial last week?
As explained to me, there's the swearing in, and then there's the being seated.
Okay.
We don't have an official vote until January 8th when we are officially seated. So we'll be sworn in on the 8th. There was a lot of confusion about that. But yeah, we were essentially sworn in case anything were happening between the 1st and the 8th.
It is decision time for the TUSD board tonight, that meeting about school closures, the board meeting at Catalina Magnet High School over on Pima Street gets underway at 6:30. I know you've been asked this question before, and I'll ask it of you now. With the as many as 14 schools perhaps on the chopping block, should the board wait or should they get this done? I mean, should they wait until the new board is constituted after the first of the year?
You know, if you would have asked me that question a few months back, I would have said, let's wait. You know, why have a decision made by a board that's for two members that are leaving? But quite frankly, you have a different perspective, I should say, once you are privy to a lot more information. And as a candidate, I was extremely critical, and I think I'm still somewhat critical of the process. But now, having a little bit more access to information that I didn't have before, I understand that inevitably these school closures, if they don't happen now, they will have to happen in the near future. One way or the other, it's going to be a very difficult thing to do. My hope is that we, as new board members, we can really start the healing process. We can really start to put our heads down and try to figure out how exactly we keep this from happening again.
So many issues now concerning security and education with the tragic shootings in Connecticut. Everyone, all school people associated with schools and educators are evaluating security. And I know TUSD is also checking out all their security systems.
Absolutely. I called Dr. Pettacone and I asked him, you know, what is our current situation with security? And we had a long discussion about the varying situations at different schools, the high schools having the majority of that security, where the SROs, some of those SROs no longer with the district, but back then the policy was to not only, you know, observe, but also to try to engage with young people to look for those things and avoid those things, but also develop those relationships. At the elementary schools, I don't think anybody really thought about that as much before Friday. And I think it's something that we're all thinking about. I have a 3.5-year-old in preschool in TUSD, and I'm very concerned as a parent. Obviously, I was devastated by the news, and I don't think any parent or teacher or educator wasn't devastated by the news on Friday and continues to as we hear more about that.
Ready to go to the Buckmaster Show live line. Dave is with us on the live line, has a question for Cam Juarez about closing middle schools. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, yes. I've heard very little talk about closing middle schools. And I see it as a point of competition with the charter schools because most of the charter schools are small and they're in the neighborhoods. And if we go back to the K-8 elementary schools, we'll fill them up and we'll still be in the neighborhoods.
Okay. Cam, your response?
Absolutely. I have been visiting some of the schools that are on the list for closure, proposed schools for closure, and also some of the receiving schools. I was yesterday at Lyons Elementary, and near them is also Carson. And I visited schools on the west side and schools on the east side and some in Midtown, but that particular school has a very unique program, the elementary school, that would be very difficult to transfer to a middle school and really be able to pay the kind of focus and attention that they've been able to do at that elementary school. Now, in relation to your question, the middle school, we have, I think a lot of folks would agree that we lose a lot of students at the middle school level. It's a different age. It's a different, really a different set of circumstances that those kids are dealing with. And I think it's important that we consider that the original criteria included this focus on middle schools, and all of a sudden the focus kind of shifted to elementary schools for the very purpose of possibly combining, you know, those schools into K-8 schools. So I definitely agree that it's a concern because a lot of the middle schools are now moving from high schools into middle schools, and so we have to be very careful about hemorrhaging any additional students or losing students in this very competitive process.
Cam, this caller did not want to go on the air, but it does kind of follow up to talking about school closures, about the health of the neighborhoods. It's a very good question. After a school closes the neighborhoods, what happens to them? I mean, in many cases, those schools, as you know, Cam, are focal points for neighborhoods. Not only focal points, but sources of pride.
Absolutely. And I know this more so than most because in my day job, I am a project coordinator with Pima County, and I work for a department called Pima County Neighborhood Reinvestment. And our focus there is to strengthen communities, to revitalize communities that have struggled. And this has been a huge issue for us as a department, as a program, because we have seen the impact really the negative impact of some of these school closures, both at some schools that I'll mention right off the bat at Jefferson Park. Jefferson Elementary, I think, is the school that's there, and also Ritchie over in Old Pasqua. And I think the impact that has had, I've seen with my own eyes, the blight that it brings with it. I mean, these are not easy things to deal with.
And when a home goes up for sale, Cam Juarez, somebody may not want to move into it if they have young children.
Absolutely.
And they may say that, I'm going to pass on this. There's a vacant school
Absolutely.
Over there. I mean, it's a huge issue.
Absolutely. The housing market, of course, you know, you when you look to buy a home, especially if you are a young family, you're looking for a good school, and you're going to do a lot of research before you sign your kids up. So it's really important to try to maintain the small school model, but we also have to consider what we're dealing with as far as the education funding, both from the federal government and the state government, but also how we as a district are managing our funds.
A lot of confusion over a board decision here recently concerning the cultural issue and culturally relevant courses. Rather than get into what the board did or didn't do, because there is confusion
Absolutely.
About that, let's say it's safe to say that you and Crystal Foster are going to take a fresh look at this whole issue.
Absolutely. Crystal is an educator. She's got 20 years of experience in education, and I'm coming in, you know, with a fresh perspective as a planner that I'm looking at long-range planning. And so we've had discussions, you know, during the campaign, but also now recently we had one discussion about, you know, how is it that we look at this? And we have to be careful with that, obviously, with issues of open meeting law, but informal conversations about what the future of the district looks like. We have to change the image of the district, and that starts by regaining the trust of the community. And I think that includes some really serious public participation, and the transparency issues that were relevant to what happened on Tuesday were very disconcerting to me when different people walk out thinking different
not
things.
Not knowing what they've just witnessed or what's going on.
We're going to have to revisit the outcome of that.
Yeah, we can't have that happen. When people leave a meeting, they should know definitively what happened.
Absolutely.
Another quick question from a caller who did not want to go on the air. That's fine. Why are parents pulling kids out of TUSD and putting them in charter schools? What is TUSD doing to stop this?
Well, I can tell you that as a candidate and now as a new board member, or at least board member-elect, my hope is that, and I said this publicly multiple times, we are looking at the biggest problem of the district is the perception of the district in the community, and if we continue to lose students, we can continue to lose those funds that are attached to those students to charter schools, and so the idea then is how do we keep students from leaving. So we're looking at how, number one, we're going to heal from these school closures. Number two, how we're going to look at the DSEG plan and how we're going to incorporate that as well in relation to the special master and Judge Burry. But I think primarily what we have to think about is we can't afford to lose any more students. We lose more students, we have to close more schools in the future. And that's something we definitely want to avoid.
Cam Wara, it's a delight talking with you. We'll look forward to meeting with you as you get into your term on the TUSD Governing Board. Cam Wara has been our guest on the Buckmaster Show. And Cam, I want to wish you and yours a wonderful holiday season and a new year filled with good hope and fortune and health and happy days.
Thank you, Bill. You as well.
Thanks a lot.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than two file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at coxbusinessaz.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
It's 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. Many folks will be lucky enough to have some time off over the holidays. May I suggest a little side trip to Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico? You know, it's only 3.5 hours east of Tucson. What a great outing that would be to go over and check out the Cliff Dwellings National Monument, walk among the folks of the 12th century just north of Silver City at the Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Plenty of great places to stay in Silver City, including Manzano's RV Park, Little Toad Creek Inn, and Pinos Altos Cabins. You can find out more about Silver City, Grant County by logging on to southwestnewmexico.org. Well, of course, Christmas is a celebration of the birth of Jesus, but it's also a time of many family traditions and events that have become a tradition in Tucson. We're going to talk about some of those Tucson traditions at Christmas now with the Buckmaster Show contributor on local history, Ken Scoville. Ken is a native Arizonan. He has been a teacher in the Tucson area for many years and writes extensively about Tucson history. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Bill.
Well, we've got some great traditions in Tucson, and they go back many, many years to, as they say, territorial days.
Territorial times, which was actually any time between before 1912 and after 1864. But I think one thing, when we talk about traditions, shopping and holiday and Christmas shopping has always been a part of Tucson, and it's always been an indicator of the economy in Tucson, and now even the national economy with Target and Walmart and Amazon always being reported. But I always thought maybe a good year in Tucson was 1882. The railroad had come into town just 2 years earlier, and there was still a lot of euphoria about that. But the big source of money was there was a silver boom in Tombstone. So there was lots of money coming into Tucson and stores that no one that's living today would remember, but Goldschmidt's Furniture Store and Zeckendorf's were doing just a great business. And it such an evolution. Businesses during those times were home stores. People, it wasn't the mass production thing that we have today.
A lot of ma and pop operations.
Right, and Zeckendorf's actually got bought up by Albert Steinfeld. Zeckendorf was his uncle, and then eventually he moved over to the Stone and Pennington. In fact, I'm sure there's people still around listening today that remembered the Steinfeld's department store, which was on the southeast corner of Stone and Pennington. And if, even as late as the 1950s, if you really wanted to do some shopping, that was a corner to be on. Because on the other corner to the south was Montgomery Ward's, and then across the street was Hockamy's. And then if you wanted to have a great lunch or a party, the hotel was across the street on the other corner.
Yeah, the Pioneer Hotel. Pioneer. And that area was probably really decorated beautifully, too,
oh,
for
yes,
Christmas.
And crowded.
Yeah.
Really crowded.
How has this tradition changed over the years?
Well, I would have to say for Tucson and most Western cities, the only thing changed about shopping is the location.
Yeah.
By the 1960s, everybody decided they wanted to have malls, and partly because of the growth in Tucson. But Santa Claus and the carolers moved with wherever the mall was. And I think it's interesting, thinking about history and how trends change. When the first malls came out, they sort of tried to replicate downtown because it was open air and you'd still stroll. Then everybody decided we wanted malls sealed in. And now we've come full circle back. If you've gone to La Encantada, now it's all open and sort of replicates. And you can even see a little history of Tucson by the way it's architecturally styled. There's citrus in one little area, and it's done very nicely.
Christmas time, of course, also means holiday concerts. We have so many concerts going on this Christmas and plays at local schools. When did this tradition begin in Tucson?
Probably in the early part of the 1880s. And another place that's been long gone was the Congress Street School, which was on the northwest corner of Congress Street and 6th Avenue. And this was a time when school was supposed to be, wasn't coeducational. There was a class for boys and a class for school girls. And at school, when they did a Christmas performance, the boys did one performance, the girls did another performance. And typically a tree was donated by a local merchant, and poems and carols were sung and recited.
You know, you mentioned the railroad arrived in the early 1880, right?
1880,
March of 18. So, and with the railroad, probably Christmas trees.
Sure. In earliest times, there were a few brave souls who wanted to deal with the Apaches, go out to the mountains and bring in a Christmas tree.
Owns, right?
But once we had enough people move into Armory Park and enough Easterners, that it became a market and they'd come in on the railroad.
How was Christmas Day celebrated in Tucson after the turn of the century?
Well, by then we were getting a little bit more established. And again, we had a downturn in the economy in the 1890s, national and locally. But after the turn of the 20th century, a building boom started in 1907, 1908. And people would have Christmas morning and go to church as usual. But it was a really time of Christmas open houses where people would always want to go out on a wagon or a buggy, or if you were rich enough to have a car at the time, everybody wanted to visit everybody. And the place for the Christmas hospitality would be Levi Manning's mansion down in Snob Hollow, and it still exists today.
I bet it was decorated to the hilt.
Oh, he liked to display that he was doing well.
I imagine that one could get almost any kind of gift then after the railroad arrived in Tucson. What kind of gift giving did we have before the railroad arrived in 1880?
Well, typically everything had to come on pack mule wagon trains or sometimes on the stagecoach, but not very much space on the stage because they wanted to pack as many people into the stage as they could as possible. Homemade candy, like rock crystals that were done on a string, popcorn balls, and then a more regional brown sugar taffy. But most of the gifts were homemade. If you had the money and was able to afford to bring it in from California and across the desert to Yuma and then to Tucson, things like rubber balls, harmonicas, dolls and jacks. And then even Robinson Crusoe and Aesop's Fables, books about those adventures would be available.
How about other traditions continuing today that we had in early Tucson that are still around?
Well, I think one thing that Tucson really has a social conscience. And I think it's even was reflected from the get-go. Even in the 1870s, people wanted to make sure that something was available for the kids for Christmas. Turkeys were a real popular item to give away. And you have to realize, in the 1870s, it was the gamblers and the saloon keepers that sort of ran the show and had the most money, sort of like you could say car dealers today. Everybody would hit up the saloon keeper for a donation. And they would even, some of the gamblers would actually go around town and throw out their small change to the kids, and they'd sort of tussle for it. So it was a different world.
One of the great Christmas traditions of today in Tucson is happening right now, the Festival of Lights.
And
Winter Haven.
And it is just a great festival. I go to it maybe twice a year. And you think about it for a minute, if you really step back and think about it, there's lots of locations where a couple houses would have a bunch of lights. But it's rare to have a neighborhood where ever that much cooperation goes on. And all the handcrafted little Christmas displays, it's sort of like small town Tucson, and that's part of the charm. And it actually became a National Register Historic District in 2006.
What's the real story, Ken, quickly, behind Winter Haven?
Well, like so many things, humble beginnings. Most people don't realize that there was a manure business on that area.
What?
A manure business. And again, this is way out of town. In 1948, a gentleman by the name of last name was Richards, he saw this area's potential for development, and he had a couple simple ideas that evolved into the tradition we see today. He had an idea to build a neighborhood similar to what he saw in Cleveland, with curving streets and these rolled-up curves. And at the same time that he's formulating this, the story goes that there was a nursery either going out of business or had a sale on Aleppo pines, which actually do well in the desert. So he bought a bunch, maybe 100 trees, and they planted them around this curving street that he would name Christmas Avenue. And then to sort of help with the promotion, he thought, why don't, 1949, when it first opened up, why don't they put lights in the trees?
Yeah, and then the rest is history. Ken Scoville, thank you very much. Hope you have a great holiday season.
You too, Ben.
Thanks, Ken. Coming up tomorrow from 6 to 8 on Wake Up Tucson, the Friday edition with Chris and Joe, Father Bill from Sailpoint, Herb Stratford has the new movies, and Millie's Pancake House for Food Friday. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. We like Culligan water. It just tastes better. And coming up this afternoon from 3 to 5, the local talk continues. The John C. Scott Show has expanded from 1 hour to 2, and John will be here from 3 to 5 this afternoon. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be with you for our Friday Focus interview tomorrow, talking about civility. Have a great day.
This is Michael Medved. Stay tuned for more Intelligent Talk on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice.